Cliff Central. The revolution.
I've got something important to tell you.
CliffCentral.com. Future CEOs on CliffCentral.com.
Welcome back to Future CEOs here on Cliff Central. It's great to be with you. If you've just joined us, my name is Gareth Armstrong. This is the Future CEO show. What do we do here? We try to bridge the gap between senior level leaders and all of you who are aspiring to be these leaders. If you're a future CEO, if you can say, yes, I am a future CEO, well, then this is the show for you. We do this every week. We do it for you. And today, once again, we have a phenomenal individual joining us in the studio. Is that okay? Can I call you phenomenal? Zipo, is that okay?
That's okay, Gareth.
Is that a nervous laugh? Well, welcome. So,
Thank you for having me.
And Nyanga, am I getting it right?
That's close enough.
Close enough. Okay, well, thank you. Thank you for, forgive me for my lack of pronunciation, perhaps, no, but fine. You're the CEO of the Masisi Zani Fund. Now, did I get that right?
That's correct.
Welcome to studio.
Thank you.
It's really good to have you here. Maybe often what we do is we ask people to introduce themselves, and if you don't brag enough, we'll brag for you. But please just tell us, tell our listeners who you are, what you do, where you're from, a little bit of a snapshot of you, please.
Okay, my name is Zipo Nyanga. I come from the Eastern Cape, born and bred in Mthatha. And I'm a sixth child and the last born. I'm a chartered accountant by profession. I'm very passionate about entrepreneurship and women empowerment in particular.
And, okay, so that's a nice broad overview. Now start bragging a little bit. and let's brag along the way as we explore your journey. So you said you're from the Eastern Cape.
Yes, that's correct.
Did you say the last born of
Yes,
six?
I'm the sixth child. Yes.
Okay, so you are the baby of the family, but...
I'm supposed to be the baby of the family, but I've often found myself behaving like... not necessarily a last born in the middle or oldish
really?
Sometimes.
Okay. Well, that's then just really tells us why you're the CEO. But let's talk a little bit about that journey. So you're a young lady down in the Eastern Cape. You were studying. What happened? Let's talk our way through to a CA, because it's not everyone that says, "Mom, Dad, I'm a 12-year-old and I want to be a CA." So how did that happen?
So I grew up in a home where there was a teacher and a farmer. My father was a farmer, my mother was a teacher, and as I was growing up, I would sell lollipops and ice pops and anything I could find I could sell.
Okay.
And at standard four, my mother decided for me that I would be a CA. At the time, I didn't even know what a CA is.
Okay.
And she then decided with my dad to change the school that I was attending to go to a commercial school that offered commercial subjects.
Mm.
And I happened to do well in accounting at junior school. And while I was there getting those awards for accounting, a lady by the name of Cindy Zilwa was from Mthatha and one of the first black chartered accountants of the country, and they were presenting awards, and my sister was there with me at the time. My mother had passed away already. So she said to me, to my sister, if ever you need any help, call me.
Mm.
So at that point in time, I think my mother was still alive, but we didn't know how sick she was. So a few years later, when I didn't have money to go to university, my sister remembered that and approached Cindy and her team, and I got a bursary later on, not immediately. So I think the love of the CA profession came from the fact that I loved money. I loved selling things.
So there was this natural instinct in you, yeah?
But I thank my parents, particularly my mother, for seeing that, you know, there's something here. Let me nurture it. Let me drive it towards a certain direction. Because honestly, at standard four, I didn't know what a chartered accountant was. Mm. And there weren't many black chartered accountants at the time. So I then went to University of Transkei. My mother had passed away. My father had lost his job, and I had no money beyond the registration money. That's when my sister then called for help, and I got my bursary from a company called Greenacre LTA in my second year. And one of the conditions was that I needed to then go to either VETS or UCT. I chose VETS 15 years ago.
Yeah.
15 years ago, I came to Johannesburg. I hadn't seen too many cars. I hadn't seen a computer lab with a lot of computers. And I had a junior degree, but I needed to then do a bridging course for me to then do my fourth year honors. Then I think I struggled a lot at VETS. You can imagine, you thought you were a clever student, and you get there, you are probably failing management accounting. It was the worst course ever. But I managed to pull through and made it, and I went to Ernst & Young and did my articles, and I passed the board exams first time, and the rest is history.
Well, you've skirted over a lot of interesting detail and a lot of hard work and sweat that went into that, a lot of focus.
Yes.
How often, just very quickly on this idea of focus, how often have you encountered individuals, young people, who look up to you and say, wow, I'd like to be like you, but then you can sense in them that there's just not the sweat, the desire or understanding how much sweat goes into it. Is this something that happens to you regularly?
Yes, it happens all the time. And, you know, my friends and people that I went to school with would often say I was too serious. I would be attending lectures left, right, and center and studying. I find that the young people today, it's a different world. There's social media. There's a certain different pressures that they're facing compared to us when we're youth at the time. So I think focus and the need for young people to stop expecting things to happen very quickly. We, you know, some people call it the microwave, you know, disease. You want to put something in the microwave and you want it out instantly. So the young people that I come across, they don't have a lot of patience, and they want things now. It takes a lot of work and a lot of focus for people to then reap the rewards.
What's the let's talk about staying power for a moment, because that's really what we're talking about. And so I've had enough conversations with a number of young people to know that they will say, I know it takes hard work, but that doesn't translate into anything. It's just a phrase. I think what we really need to talk about is staying power and the origins of staying power. Where did you find the motivation, the something inside of you that kept you going, even during very, very difficult periods? I mean, you've described how you didn't have any money. There was death in your family. Close death as well.
Yes.
How did you carry on going? Where did you have to go inside of yourself to do that?
I like the way you put it, staying power. I usually call it resilience. For me, there were defining moments in my life. The first one being the one where my mother had passed away and my father had lost his job. So I had to make a choice there and there at an early age to say, do I want to secure financial wellness, or do I just gonna let the world, you know, am I just gonna exist and see where this thing takes me? So I made the decision to say I will not suffer from poverty. And secondly, I drew inspiration from my parents and their dreams that they had for me, and I wanted to sort of make them proud of what I would have achieved, and also the community that I came from. I wanted to be that beacon of hope. So for me, what I learned is that failure is one thing that taught me. In my career, I've done it all. I've taken risks and I've been an entrepreneur, and we ran out of money.
Okay.
And, you know, I had to go back to where I was trained, and Ernst & Young at the time took me, you know, with open arms. But for me, the ability to take risks and me having tried out entrepreneurship and tried out different roles from a financial manager to a deal maker to all these things that I've done for me to get to the CEO position. Those are all the ingredients, failure and successes and different milestones that have contributed for me to be here.
There's you said something a little bit earlier when you said your friends described you as a bit of a serious individual.
Yeah.
And I mean, I can relate to that. But and the reason I
thank God someone else.
And what I did was I tried to find how do I justify this? How do I turn it into a positive? Because it wasn't a positive when it's coming out of my mouth. And so the question is, the question that I asked is this really worth it? And there was a quote that I learned quite early on. It's, today I will do what others won't, so tomorrow I can do what others can't.
Wow.
And I think that's what I hear you saying, that you really had to embrace during this journey up to qualifying as a CA.
Yes.
Let's move beyond the CA then. You said you were an entrepreneur. Tell us about your first business.
Well, I'm an aspiring entrepreneur. So I always say to people, you know, I might be in corporate, but there's this burning desire in me to be an entrepreneur and have a legacy business one day. Hence, my passion in helping entrepreneurs in what I do.
Yep.
But I was involved in an investment company a few years ago, around 2008, 2009. And we were investing in property, which is a long-term type business.
Sure. Capital intensive, long-term.
Yes, yeah. Yes. And then the other arm, I thought in the CA in me, I thought I had made some calculations and we were fine. We were going to get money from this cash cow in the form of the outdoor media wing of the investment arm. So okay. I thought I had calculated all the things.
Mm-hmm.
Little did I know that 2008, 2009, the economic downturn and things went south. The first thing people cut is advertising,
which is such a strange thing to do in a business. And that's a whole other debate. But yes, I'm sorry.
So we ran out of funds. The investor pulled out. Didn't renew the working capital facility for 2 months. I didn't get paid.
Mm.
I had to figure out what am I gonna do. And I went back to corporate.
Mm.
And luckily, I spent a few months trying to rebuild my credibility, but I appreciate the lessons I've learned from that experience, because now as I'm helping entrepreneurs in my line of work, I actually can identify with failure and things not going well, and I empathize a lot with things such as giving them money late or whatever, because I know how difficult it is. So I wasn't paid for 2 months. I was on credit bureau and all the other things.
Oh, yeah?
But I've bent my fingers. I've learned a thing or two. Now I appreciate it.
Look, it's how it works. Who was it? Gil Overd. He is one of the CEOs at the Creative Council.
Yes,
and
yes.
Also the Dragon's Den Dragon.
Yeah.
I think he's now on Shark Tank or something. And I remember, I don't know if he said it to me or if I read it somewhere, but anyway, we've had a number of different conversations, and he has said that if he was faced with two people, one having never failed, and this is now from an investment perspective, one having never failed and one having failed, he would invest in the individual that failed.
Yeah.
Because he could see the ability to bounce back.
Yes.
The tenacity that you spoke about. This idea of the ability to process it on multiple levels and then still come back and get it back into the fight.
Yes, yes. Failure is part of success. That's just one of the things that I've learned.
Now, let's just quickly talk about where you are at the moment. So, Masisi Zani Fund, that is what?
That is a fund that was started by Old Mutual after consulting with the National Treasury. The unclaimed shares trust was closed, and we had this money that we needed to make a difference with.
Mm.
So the decision in 2007 was to use the money for funding entrepreneurs and capacity building and really reviving the spirit of entrepreneurship in the country. So we fund businesses in rural areas, peri-urban and small towns in different sectors such as agribusiness, manufacturing, manufacturing, supply chain, and franchises.
Where do you come in? So is it startup? Is it small business that's already established, been around for a few years? Are you there to accelerate or are you there to incubate?
We fund a combination. So from startups to expansions and acquisitions of existing businesses. But we've also seen that there are entrepreneurs that come to us and they might have a brilliant idea, but maybe the business plan is not written properly or some contract issues or compliance issues, ISO or HACCP or whatever. So we then help them with one or two things that can then make their business plan bankable under our accelerator program, which is part of the business support that we offer.
So this is high touch. This is not just a take some money, go and do your thing.
No.
I mean, you can't do that nowadays.
No,
you
can't.
I like your facial expression. No. It's like, listen.
We have to follow the money. Yeah. We must give the entrepreneurs the money, but we also must see if there's any need for help, be it, you know, walking the journey with them, be it from a technical, marketing or financial aspects. We've found that just throwing the money and leaving and thinking that you're going to get your repayments hasn't worked.
No.
The world of entrepreneurship is also a lonely one. You want to, you know, to feel like you've got a partner in the funder that has given you money.
No, absolutely. We do speak to a lot of different funding organizations here, and the ones that we like the most are those that offer a high touch support kind of offering, and we're glad that you do that as well. Okay, so let's then talk a little bit about this evolution from entrepreneur, dare I say failed entrepreneur, aspiring entrepreneur. You said aspiring entrepreneur, but when I hear aspiring entrepreneur, I say, okay, there's a couple of failures in there.
I'm still aspiring.
Yeah, exactly. So an aspiring entrepreneur comes CEO. So where did the CEO part suddenly come in? Was this a phone call? Was this an offer? Did you seek it out? Talk to us about that, please.
So throughout my career, I might be a CA by profession, and the expectation from society is that you will end up in a CFO role. So I've done different roles in the finance side and financial management and financial modeling and all the other things and risk management. But in me, there's this passion about entrepreneurship, about business and understanding what works, what doesn't work.
Okay.
And also building something. When I die, I must be able to say, you know, this is Zizi Inc. That I've left behind. So I've always been interested in operations and business. And throughout my finance roles, I've mixed it with operations to understand business better. So I've always wanted to be a CEO. When I joined Masisiza and a fund, and my boss at the time, you know, those career conversations, they call you in and say, so now it's your first day, let's do your performance scorecard and your career, you know, annual plan and all that stuff. And he asked me, so what are your plans now that you've gotten the job? I said, well, I want to be the CEO. So the minute you know that you are leaving this organization, I want to have an environment that sort of assists me to gain all the experience that I need, such that when you leave, I'm ready. Mm.
So how old were you at the time?
I was 33, I think.
33, yeah. Okay, so that's young.
Yes.
Would you have, if you look back on that conversation, would you describe it as brash? Would you describe it as a little foolhardy, maybe? How would you describe that conversation? Look, I mean, it obviously bore fruit.
Yes.
But how would you describe it if you look back on it in real terms?
You know, when I sat in that office and I said, I want to then be the CEO, I had actually analyzed a few women in my career. And I thought by the age of 35, they seem to be doing well. So at 35, I must be a CEO of an organization like this. So I actually believed it when I said it.
But then how was it received? Because often,
we can
believe it, but sometimes we transmit our beliefs not so well, and it can come across as brash or arrogant.
Yes.
But in this case,
I think he laughed. His face was shocked, almost laughing. but I think composed himself, because he was like, you know, it was as if he's saying, oh, you have the nerve.
Well, exactly. So that laughter was a little bit of a nervous kind of, okay, what do I say now? I think that's what I hear. Okay, so you're now in the office of CEO. You've been there for a decent amount of time. That means you've learned some things. What would you say is the number one lesson or difference in perspective that you've had as you've moved into the CEO office versus what you thought the CEO office was going to offer when you were going in?
Yes, I found that the CEO's office requires me to be aware at all times. Mm. So I can no longer just come to the office and mind my own business and not pay attention.
Keep your head down. Okay.
Even when you are feeling a little bit sick, you can't just say, well, I'm not coming to work today. So it requires a whole lot of balls to juggle around and notice people's spoken and unspoken words. So
the unspoken, and that's such a significant thing that you've just said there.
Yes.
Unspoken is so important, and it's a huge amount of the communication that actually happens.
That's what I've learned. And I think the time management is something that I've learned to do better, because there's a whole lot of things that require my attention. At first I needed to then learn to delegate and pull my team with me, such that I don't end up carrying all the responsibility myself, and make sure that everyone else is on board to making a difference.
So I'm looking at you and you're smiling nervously at me, because I picked up on something that you just said. Are you a bit of a control? I mean, look, you're a CA. You like to have a handle on things, or so what's are you a little bit of control? Is that you?
Yes. Let me say yes. Let me not justify. It's part of how we're also trained. You need to have facts and figures and know what's happening, when and how, who's doing what. So I tend to then want to know what should be happening, when, who's doing what. So yes, I am a control freak.
Okay. I didn't say freak. You added that there. There's an element of control. What do you think? And please share it with our future CEOs listeners, and listen very carefully at home or in your car or in your office to this answer. I think it's going to be telling. And the question is, what do you think will help you to release? Just open the hand enough so that you don't lose control, but you're able to allow people to really really be activated to execute their own way, according to the skills that you've employed them against.
Yes, I think I've sort of started releasing based on the fact that it's around trust. Once you trust your team members and you've had enough time to sort of put your stamp and say, this is the vision, this is what we're doing, what do you think about A, B, and C, and this is how I see your role in this vision and strategy, and get the buy-in from each and everyone. So trust developing that sense of loyalty for that particular leader is something that I've learned. And secondly, I think once you clearly articulate what it is that your dream is for this organization, and make sure that each and every one of the team members know their role. I always say to my team, well, the Masisiza Fund team as a whole is a puzzle. We need to identify the piece that you are, and I play to their strengths so that we can all win. If individually you play your role and be the best that you can be, then all of us together we will succeed.
It sounds like you almost are describing an evolution of yourself into what I'm going to refer to as a chess master of sorts.
Yes.
You play the appropriate piece for the appropriate at the appropriate time,
yes,
for the appropriate move to achieve the appropriate objective.
That is correct.
I think that's what I'm hearing you say.
Yeah.
We are running out of time. Time moves quickly here in the future CEO studio. And so maybe just as a final question, if you could go back in time, and we ask all executives and CEOs and experts and people that we sit here together with, we ask them this question, it's so revealing. If you could go back in time and speak to the young 20-year-old future CEO you, what would you say to that person, knowing what was to come? What would you say to that person?
I'd say relax.
Okay.
You are going to do well. you need to learn to network better and learn from the people that have walked your path, but be patient with yourself. I would also say, though, it's good that you don't just exist. You sort of play some sort of role in directing your own life.
Yeah, so relax doesn't mean
do nothing.
Sit back on the couch.
No.
It means do exactly that. Yes. Play a role, but just relax.
Patiently.
Okay, very nice. And your body language is very telling. You've got your hands up and you're saying, patient. Zizipho Nyanga, CEO of the Masisi Zani Fund. Thank you so very much for joining us here in the Future CEO Studio. Thank you for sharing your insights and your journey and being a little bit vulnerable. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Gareth. Thank you for having me.
All right, that's all we have time for this week. We will see you same time, same place next week, Thursday. We will see you then. Have a great long weekend. Happy and a very happy Youth Day tomorrow.
Future CEOs on CliffCentral.com. Cliff Central.
I've got something important to tell you.
CliffCentral.com.